Okay, so the next part that I want to cover with you guys is in equipping. There are actually going to be some people who come up and help me with this equipping. And what it is we want to share with you some very commonly used terms, not only in Reality Ventura, but in kids ministry, that are really foundational. And I know there are some people coming from Crosspoint. There's a lot of you that are new. I want to say welcome to all of the new volunteers. Thank you so much. I know that's a little scary, but it's actually really, really, really fun. Super fun. And so these are very common phrases we say, and we say them like it's like second nature. Like, we just say them, and then we realize, oh, you may not know what I mean by that. And so what we want to do, me, Karina, and Billy, we want to share with you what these phrases are, what they mean. So that when we say, oh yeah, because ministry flows from intimacy, or don't forget, ministry flows from intimacy, you will like know what we're talking about. Or if we say, oh yeah, a gospel-centered ministry, people have very different ideas of what that means, or connection over correction. Like, what does that mean? Some of you may know because you've been around. Some of you may not know. I just want to make sure that we are, or maybe some of you think you know and then you actually. So we're all bringing it back together to define it. So we're going to go spend about 4 minutes in each of these things, sharing all of them, what they mean. I want to tell you guys, I have it listed, ministry flows from intimacy, then connection over correction, followed by gospel-centered ministry. We're going to actually flip it. We're going to say ministry flows from intimacy, then I'm going to teach gospel-centered ministry, and Karina's going to close with connection over correction. So just to give you an idea. So I would like to invite up Billy Hunter, who is going to define ministry flows from intimacy. Billy, what do we mean by that?
That's a good question, Anna Herring. Ministry flows from intimacy. And I'm going to jump right in. There are three key aspects to that phrase. And as a person who has been in ministry at Reality, in the family of churches, and here at Reality Ventura specifically for as long as I have, this is not just a simple saying. It really represents the heart of the ministry. And so ministry flows from intimacy. The first thing we mean by that is that we need to know whose ministry it is. Whose ministry are we a part of? In the daily grind of life, it's easy to forget whose ministry it is. We all desire to serve Jesus. We ask Jesus for help, but we assume sometimes that it's our ministry and therefore it's our responsibility, and that we become kind of the principal actors in this thing that we call ministry. And it's true that we're called to be faithful, of course, with the work that we're called to. But the more profound truth is that all ministry is Jesus's ministry. Ministry is not asking Jesus to join us in what we offer to others. Ministry is participating with Jesus in his ongoing work as he offers himself to others through us. The book of Acts starts with this. Acts chapter 1, the first 5 verses, Jesus tells his followers to stay and wait and be filled with his Spirit, right? And then they go to continue his work. They continue his ministry, fulfilling what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 28, where he says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go, teach everything that I have taught, everything that I have commanded. Make followers of Jesus, baptize them, right? And then the promise, for I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. All ministry is Jesus' ministry. Guys, we're called by God. We're called to God. We're called for God. And therefore, our work, our ministry, is to be with God, empowered by him, directed and defined by him. Jesus' earthly ministry didn't end when he ascended to heaven, right? It's through his body, through the church, his ministry takes on a different form. We now see the ministry of Christ continuing through the church. And the ministry that we get to enter is an extension of Jesus' ministry. So all Christian ministry is participating in Jesus' ongoing ministry. And ministry is about our joining Jesus, not Jesus joining us with our thing. We join Jesus in what he's doing, which is why we need his direction, which is why we need a leading. We need a gift. We need gifts. We need that sense of calling. And we need the Holy Spirit to empower us and give us the unction for it, because we're joining Jesus in what he's up to rather than the perspective where we're just inviting Jesus into the things that I happen to be good at. And so Jesus in Matthew chapter 11, verse 30, he says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." When we join Jesus in his ministry, that verse is for us, right? Jesus, not us, bears the burden of ministry. It's his deal. It's his responsibility. We can experience rest and joy knowing that the outcome of ministry is on Jesus and not on us. Understanding whose ministry it is should be tremendously liberating. The second thing that we mean when we say this is that ministry is directed by God. Ministry is not directed by the needs of the world around us. John chapter 5, verse 2, Jesus is at the pool of Bethesda, right? Multitudes of people who have physical disabilities are at the pool. And Jesus heals one of them, right? If Jesus was directed by the needs around him, he would have healed all of them. If Jesus was directed by the Pharisees that were on the scene, he wouldn't have healed any of them because it was the Sabbath. And they were all waiting for him to break the law, right? They were all waiting for him to do some kind of, you know, work on the Sabbath. But he heals just one guy. And he does it on the Sabbath, which is kind of punk rock, right? And we see this, right? Like Jesus is directed by the Father. He's not directed by the need. And he's not directed by the self-religious, the self-pious. John chapter 11, the story of Lazarus. It's the same thing. He's not need-driven. Right, Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, are begging him to return. Jesus waits two extra days, returns. He's been dead for 4 days. And their perspective is Jesus delayed, Lazarus is dead, right? And they're expressing their disappointment to him. But even the love of Jesus for Lazarus and the plea of the sisters doesn't set Jesus' ministry agenda. His agenda is not set by the needs of the world around him. And later, when Jesus does the act of, the sisters protest, right? He's like, "Well, open up the tomb." They're like, "Well, no, not now, right? He'll stink. It's too late, right?" Earlier, they try to get Jesus to come, you know, early enough. They're trying to direct the timing of his ministry. And then after, they're trying to get him, you know, as he's actually going into the grave, they're trying to resist and stand in front of the ministry happening. And guys, that's why we can't be directed by the needs and the people around us. Because people will always resist true ministry. Jesus often met human needs and requests, but Lazarus demonstrates that these needs did not dictate the direction or timing of his ministry. His ministry to the Father did. Jesus was led by the Father. All of Jesus' ministry is grounded in submission to the Father. Oswald Chambers wrote, "We slander God by our very eagerness to work for him without knowing him." We slander God by our eagerness to work for him without knowing him. And that's the age-old temptation, to do things for God without cultivating a relationship with God. There's a profound difference between doing things for God and doing what God tells us to do. And the third thing about ministry flowing from intimacy, the third tenet of that principle when we say that, is that we need to be a people who enjoy Jesus. Guys, enjoy Jesus first. As you're called into kids ministry, youth ministry, whatever work for God you're called into, enjoy Jesus. One of the great truths about God and about his love is that all of Jesus is available to everyone. But only those few who choose to have as much as they want. You can have as much intimacy, as much joy, as much presence as you desire in your life. He's like a vast ocean. And you just can fill yourself up with the love of Christ. But the thing is, like, Jesus is this vast ocean. So often we come to the ocean with a Dixie cup, right? Or like you do the total blow it parent move. You're like, "Oh, I forgot the sand toys," right? "I don't even have a bucket. I'm just at church and I'm not prepared to receive," right? If you bring an Arrowhead jug, he'll fill that, right? If you bring a giant oil tanker, he'll fill that. Have as much Jesus as you choose. And my encouragement for you is to fill yourself with the presence, the love, and the joy of the Lord. You can have as much as you desire. Intimacy with Jesus is like a warm campfire on a cold night, C.S. Lewis would write in Mere Christianity. Right? We want to huddle around a warm fire on a cold night. We want to linger there. We want to gaze into the fire. But then we turn around. And on that cold night, we turn around, and with the warmth still radiating from our bodies, we welcome people who are out in the cold, out in the dark, to come join us at the fire. God, guys, that's what ministry flowing from intimacy. Allow the intimacy, the joy, your enjoyment of Jesus to be what motivates you, propels you, and equips you to the call. The ministry is Jesus's ministry. The ministry is directed by God, not by the needs around us. Enjoy Jesus and enjoy ministry with him. Let all that we endeavor to do for God flow from our intimacy with God. Thank you.
It's like, in the words of Leanne Suji, it's like drinking water from a fire hose. It's good. No, it's really good. But we have more. So the next one is, where are my notes? They're right here. This is my life. Okay. So the next thing I want to share with you guys is defining what a gospel-centered ministry is. What does it mean to be a part of a gospel-centered ministry? So what I mean by that is that it's a ministry that walks in, points toward, and pours out the good news of Jesus. Okay? It is all about the good news of Jesus. Let's define, though, what is the good news. I feel like it seems kind of silly to, like, start there, but we need to know what the good news is in order to know what it means to walk in this and to point towards it and to pour out. So Ephesians 2, verses 4 through 9 says, "But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. And God raises us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus, in order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus." And this is the key point. "For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And that is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." So, it is a gift. It is not of works. It is not about how good you are. It is not how perfect you are. It's not about your morals. It's not about your values. It's not about any of that. It is by grace, through faith, that you are saved. It is a gift. And it is important to remember that when we do ministry, that we are not only speaking that, we are also showing that to the people around us. So the first thing is we ourselves need to walk in the gospel. And I'm just going to reiterate everything that Billy just said. Ministry flows from intimacy. We are looking to Jesus every step of the way and preaching the gospel to ourselves every day, recognizing that before we ever do anything, we are loved and accepted by God. All we need to do for ourselves is receive it, to sit in it, to rest, to abide. We are first ourselves as a team, and like individually, we are walking in the gospel. The second thing is that gospel-centered ministry is always pointing to Jesus and the gospel. We are not putting a weight on other people when we do ministry to be perfect or to do good or to have certain morals or to have certain values, to look a certain way and act a certain way. We know that every single story in the Bible, in addition, isn't about those individual characters. We know that every single story in the Bible actually points to Jesus. Jesus is the better David. Jesus is the better Adam. Jesus is the better rescuer. He is the hero of every story. And he's not only the hero in like our individual lives, he's the hero in their individual lives. So when we're teaching the kids, when we're interacting with them, we are always pointing to Jesus and the gospel. And another gospel part of a gospel-centered ministry is we're always pouring out the gospel. We don't just speak the gospel, like I just said. We show the gospel in how we interact with the kids. when we connect with them, when we play with them, and even when necessary, when we correct them. We want it to reflect the gospel. James 2, 17 through 18 says, in the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. We aren't just teaching the kids the gospel, we are showing them the gospel and pouring it out as we're interacting with them. So, how does this not look in kids' ministry? This does not look like us teaching them character traits. This does not look like us creating good behaving children. This does not look like us trying to get them to act a certain way or behave a certain way. Although we do want them to respect each other and their teachers, that is not our goal. Because this is actually going to lead towards legalism, and it's very destructive, because legalism is not from the Lord. It is a weight that we're putting on these kids. The goal is and always will be Jesus. We are not called to make good behaving children, although it's nice to have a class that's easy, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to make disciples, and it starts with Jesus. And out of that will come the behaviors and the morals and the values, because their heart is first changed by God. And in order for their heart to be changed by God, we need to not just teach them about the gospel, we want to show them the gospel and how we interact with the kids. Scripture says again, for it is by grace that they, those kids, have been saved through faith. And this is not from themselves, it is the gift of God. Just like it was a gift for you, that's the gift for these kids. Not by works that no one can boast. So, we seek intimacy with God, like I said. We allow him to pour into us. And when we pour out, never forget the gospel. Keep it before us. Seek his leading. Remember that Jesus is always the hero, not only in the story, but in our lives and in their lives. And the next question is, so how does this actually look in kids' ministry? How do you actually do this? Because you do need to have a class that is managed or manageable, but sometimes it's hard. And so how do you show the gospel to these kids? How do we correct the kids? How do we connect with these kids in a way that reflects the gospel? And I am going to divert that answer to our next little mini equip. Karina will be coming up, and she will be teaching about connection over correction.
We're so excited for you. All right, so if you've been in kids ministry any amount of time, you've probably heard the phrase connection over correction, or connection versus correction. So we want to kind of talk about, what does that mean? So first of all, it serves as a reminder that connection is the goal. So even in really difficult situations, the goal, as Anna was saying, there's going to be some repetition here, is not to make good behaving robots, as you may have heard in your interview. Sometimes we share that. Our goal is to make disciples. So when we connect with the kids, they then are more open to receiving the gospel and open to hearing what it's like to do life with Jesus. So, in the hope that then they will go out from this place and tell others about Jesus. So that's the main goal. So when you find yourself in a really difficult situation, whether it's with a class or a group of kids, it's good to pause and remember, why are we here? Are we here so that children sit down quietly and follow directions and are very easy, so to speak? And we'll talk about practically, it's like, yeah, that is nice. Logistically, as a teacher, I get that. So we're just going to talk about what does that look like a little bit later. But the second point that's important to remember is that everything happens in the context of relationship. So if you think about anything meaningful you've learned, like riding a bike, or learning to read, likely there was someone who taught you that, and you learned that within the context of a relationship. So when a situation arises in which a child may need correction, that correction will most likely only be effective if there's some kind of connection with that child. So I'm gonna ask you to think back to when you were in elementary school. So it could have been last year, could have been a few decades ago. And think back to when you walked into your class in the morning and you had a substitute. So for me, those memories are super clear. I remember, not me, but other kids in my class, testing all the rules and all the boundaries with this new poor teacher that nobody knew. And this teacher would sometimes just get so frustrated trying to correct them, trying to enforce the rules, and sometimes maybe even get angry. But then I remembered and was reminded that there are other kinds of teachers and substitutes in our lives, those that take time to maybe share a personal story or remember your name or learn something important about you or something that you enjoy doing. And so that's just an example of how connections are impactful and make meaningful experiences for children. So that's just an example of how connection impacts correction. And the main difference I observed was that a stranger walking into a classroom, which often happens here, is we're strangers, the children don't know us, there's a different teacher every other week, and if you need to miss for any reason, maybe there's a sub. So, the second example of the teacher who connected was much more effective at managing the classroom and correcting behavior when necessary. So the basis of connection, from what I've observed, is being known and cared for by someone you can trust. Isn't that also the way we experience the love of God? This is one of the ways that we can demonstrate the love of God to the children who are part of Reality Kids. So, on that same note, what does connection versus correction not mean? So sometimes what we found was that teachers were scared to correct and scared to make too harsh of a correction and lose all connection with the kids. So we want to make sure we're communicating clearly that correction is not bad or forbidden. Actually, correction is necessary and good when it's done in a loving way. So the phrase is helpful, like I said, in causing us to pause and think about connection before we correct. We want to do our best to correct in ways that reflect the gospel instead of correcting in ways that might invoke shame or anger or fear. So we don't know what kinds of situations kids are walking in with on a Sunday morning. Maybe they had a really rough morning. It is hard to get here on time, but they are coming earlier to get a spot in their class. So just imagine trying to get your family out of the house and then coming to church and like not having a spot. That's super stressful. Anyway, aside from that, there's much other serious things going on in their lives we don't know about or may not be shared with us. Maybe their parents are going through a divorce. Maybe there's a death in the family. Maybe they're moving to a new house, which for young children can be very stressful. So just having, like Anna said, the grace, extending that grace of not knowing. We don't need to know everything that's going on in their lives, but when we see behavior that could be viewed as difficult or challenging, we need to pause and think about, what might this child be telling me, and how can I extend grace and show them love in this situation? So we have grace for what we do not know, and we can lovingly guide them in the way that we should go. So what does it look like in kids' ministry for us to connect versus correct? And also correct when necessary, because that is part of what we do as our job here, making disciples. So in kids' ministry, connection looks like playing, fun, bubbles, games. These are all ways we can build connections that capture their imagination so that we can then teach them. Intentionality is already built into the schedule that we have with the kids. So when they arrive, there's a check-in time, parents sign in, there's like a free time to play. That is 15 minutes, generally speaking, that we have from the time we either start a game or go to large group. We have that time to play and connect with the kids in some way. So use that time. Have an eye for the kids that are out on the outskirts or kind of keeping to themselves. When we go into large group, we can connect by demonstrating the hand motions, making eye contact, sitting close to them. So there's different ways we can do these things. During Lollipops and Lemons, which is our prayer time, we're invited to pray for and with the children. We're invited into their personal lives, and we get a closer look at what's truly important to them. And then, if you are a nursery, toddler, or preschool folk, I have not forgotten about you. with the younger age groups, really, we encourage you to connect with the parents also. They are maybe nervous, maybe really excited to drop their child off. And so introducing yourself, asking about them, sharing a little bit about yourself goes a really long way in connecting with that person. So they feel that they actually know the people that they're dropping their baby off with. Maybe sharing an observation at pickup that, oh my gosh, little Susie, she said this word today I hadn't heard her say before, and like celebrating that with the parent. There's so many milestones we get to see in that younger age group where they learn to crawl and walk and talk. And it's really fun as a parent to connect with other people who care about your child's development and growing up. And it's really cool that we get to share that with them. So that's just a way for the younger age groups that we get to connect. So what happens when there are times when we need to correct? And when are those times? So generally speaking, those times are when children are a danger to others, when children are a danger to themselves, or when children are destructive towards their surroundings. Those are like the three overarching, like, yeah, those things need to be immediately either prevented or blocked or stopped or whatever that is. And that's going to have to happen pretty quickly, right? We're not going to just let other children hurt other children or themselves. So with that being said, those are instances when you would intervene right away and handle that situation as best as you could, given those circumstances. And we actually want you to reach out to a coordinator. Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's not me. You can text a coordinator. Their number is at the bottom of every sign-in sheet. We're here to support you and to support parents and children. And so any way we can do that, we're happy to step in. It's not a failure if you have to call the coordinator. And it sometimes is just very helpful to have another presence in the room for the child to be like, oh, there's backups here. and then just as a general rule, let's say there's some things that are not as serious as hurting themselves or hurting others. Maybe it's just a situation you have to take care of or a pattern that you're noticing. Our encouragement for you guys is to first address issues to the group. Oh, I'm noticing it's getting a little loud in here and it's hard for, you know, everyone to hear the story. And then you might address a smaller group. Oh, I'm noticing that sound is coming from this area over here. You know it's Johnny. It's okay. You don't have to say, hey, Johnny in the front, right? Stop. No. You just escalate it slowly and trickle it down. If you do get to the point where it does need to be an individual conversation, our encouragement is that you do that in a discreet, respectful way, not in front of a group. So that seems to be the most effective. Hopefully that was helpful in knowing what connection over correction means. Hopefully you'll be able to glean some things from that. And if you have any questions, we are open book. We're here for you guys, and we so appreciate what you guys do. Thank you.
It's not so far, Karina. Because she gets to come back up again in a moment. Okay, so yeah, like she said, we are an open book. We want you guys to ask us questions, clarifying questions. If we don't know the answer, we're willing to, like, discuss it and talk about it and even like amongst ourselves, like debrief it and all of that. So, and then get back to you. So please don't ever be afraid to reach out to us about anything.